Hey everyone, it's me, Abadesi.
And Michael Behane, back again.
For another episode of Techish.
Your favorite. We harmonized there. That was quite nice.
Yeah.
The album is coming soon.
Techish Volume 1.
It's been a while since we've been on, man.
It's been a few weeks. Yeah, have you missed us, everyone? What have you been up to? A lot of things been happening in the world of tech while we've been gone. Tech don't sleep. Even if we're not there talking about it, it still goes on.
Which I'm actually offended by.
I was going to say, that's quite selfish of tech. I feel like you should wait for us to finish our mini season break.
I know. So where do we begin? I want to begin actually something that happened recently. There was I think Peter Thiel, one of the founders of PayPal, Facebook investor, billionaire, Trump supporter.
Author of Zero to One.
Controversial dude. Marmite, you either love him or hate him. He basically came out and was like, he did a speech at some Republican convention. And he was like, essentially saying that Google should be investigated by the FBI or the CIA.
What?
Yeah, because they are working on essentially general AI. They acquired DeepMind, which is like a startup that spun out of my old uni, UCL. Shout out to UCL. And that... They have done work with the Chinese military, and also that essentially that working on general AI is so important that it has such national security implications that he actually is afraid that the Chinese have infiltrated Google. That
what?
Google employees perhaps might be working for Chinese government, higher ups perhaps.
Wow. That's deep.
Yes. And the reason why I find it so fascinating is because on many levels, one, now, all of a sudden, if you're a Chinese-American working at Google, you're going to get side-eyed.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so that's almost like a Red Scare, like, you know, are you now, or have you ever been a communist type
McCarthy
thing?
McCarthy era's back.
Yeah, like, the McCarthyism is real. And then, but two, at the same time, is it outlandish what he's saying? Because if you think about it, how hard would it be for China to be like, let's get our brightest computer scientists and be like, go apply for Google and find out what they're doing on the inside and just tell us what's happening. How hard is that? That's not that hard.
Yeah.
When I look at what Putin's done with like weaponizing Facebook,
yeah,
that's actually kind of simple. Dimples, like, it's not that difficult. But, you know, where do you draw the line? What are you going to start interrogating every single Chinese American at Google? That's
what
so
dread. What do you think is the motivation here?
What would be a hypothetical motivation for Chinese government to do so?
No. Sorry. What's the motivation for Peter Thiel to do that? I mean, I don't really care about the accusation because America is like all over the spy game too.
100%.
Who's to say there aren't U.S. agents who've infiltrated Huawei or, you know, hanging out in the factories in Shenzhen or wherever? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that works both ways.
Yeah.
But what I guess I'm trying to understand is this, you know, Thiel is very... very, you know, right wing, very pro Trump. Bizarrely, because I mean, he is a gay man, as far as I know, and the Trump administration is quite toxically masculine, and that would include homophobia. But let's not even start unpicking that. What is his angle here? What's his motivation? Like, has he been encouraged to do this as like joining this anti-China propaganda?
I think he's a Facebook board member. So that is another spanner in the works, because maybe he's thinking, let's just like elbow one of our competitors. That's a factor. Secondly, maybe he believes it. I mean, the trade war between the US and China is heating up. He's pro-Trump, and maybe he does have those genuine concerns. I don't know if there is any kind of Machiavellian reasons why he's saying it beyond that. I mean, but then if you did genuinely believe that, why are you doing it in such a public forum? Why wouldn't you just... I'm sure he's got channels to Trump. Like... And he basically intimated that he thinks that the Google like higher up should be interrogated in a not so friendly manner.
Wow, Guantanamo.
Yeah, I mean, I never heard that Google or DeepMind was working with the Chinese military. I didn't know that. If that is true, then...
Why is that a bad thing? So DeepMind...
From my perspective, it's not a bad thing.
Because DeepMind works with the UK government.
Correct.
Right? They're helping to save the NHS... probably millions, maybe billions
Correct.
Pounds over the long run, which they absolutely need because this Tory government has just destroyed public services and
Correct.
Reduced the money that's allocated to them. So if there's an application
Right.
of the neural network that DeepMind have built in a way which contributes to Chinese society, like, should they be stopped from doing that?
I mean... I think me and you probably might not care as much, but if you're somebody who cares about American hegemony, American dominance, or over the world, then you do care. Mm. And that essentially it's a race between these two countries now, who's going to dominate this century that we're in right now. So if your priority is making sure that America stays dominant, then you probably are going to see what Google is doing. It's kind of treacherous and treasonous, and that's what he's kind of said. But let's watch this space. Like, are we going to see Google executives in a jumpsuit, in an orange jumpsuit? I sincerely doubt it, because they're normally rich and normally white. So I don't think so. But yeah, like, oh man, what's next, boy? Flipping hell. You know what? This reminds me actually of just like the intersection now of government and tech. It's getting real deep. Like, you follow the whole thing with like Libra coin. We talked about it last time.
Yeah.
And it's almost now as if like Trump came out and was like, F this Libra coin, you ever think you're gonna test the US dollar, you're crazy. And like, what are your thoughts on Libra, like on the details of it now that it's come out? Like, smart move, bad move, implications?
Do you feel like, in terms of like the hoops that or that people have to jump through to be a part of the foundation, like the financial commitment to be a part of the Libra foundation, or do you just mean like it?
No, so like, for example, like Facebook has gotten into a whole bunch of trouble with interfering with the election.
Yes.
Now, if I'm working at Facebook, I would probably be scared to test the US government any further. And you're trying to come for what makes a nation powerful, which is its currency. Like, the US dollar is the number one currency in the world, and it's part of why America has so much sway over the world. Like, when you're in Africa, nobody cares about the pound sterling. I was in Uganda, which is a former British colony, and I was like, well, I got pounds. They're like, we don't want that. You got dollars? I was like, wow, US dollar, numero uno.
Yeah, and economy's pegged to the dollar, right?
Exactly. Like, lots of countries.
And in Zimbabwe, they use dollars instead of their own currency.
Yeah. So, like, if you're coming in and competing with the US dollar, like, you don't think they're gonna just come and break you up quicker? I don't know what they're thinking.
I don't know. I think legislation is so slow to move. Think of any industry in the US in our lifetime that's been broken up by government. Like, I understand maybe the precedent wasn't there for that to happen, but at the same time, I think it'll be slow to move. I think right now, on a theoretical level, or as far as like political discourse goes, it'll be easy for folks to disagree with it. But the future of crypto goes like far beyond, in my view anyway, like, you know, economic dominance or whatever, and speaks more to other really important themes like financial inclusion, greater transparency. I feel like we're at the bottom of the wave of like blockchain and how it like integrates into how we operate as a society.
Right.
So I feel like it's too early to say. And also, as individuals and as consumers, we probably won't be interacting with Libra for many years to come, right? Because it's going, the way they've structured the foundation, all this kind of stuff, it's like you're first like buying into it as like large organizations and like corporates. And I feel that to some extent that could be a strategic move, right? Because what they're basically saying is, let's get stakeholders involved. Let's build up the number of organizations and institutions of clout that support this movement by being a part of the foundation before we even get anywhere near a place where consumers can be a part of this. And maybe that for them is their way of trying to go in through like almost a collective action or grassroots kind of route, because they've anticipated that legislators will be concerned, policymakers will be concerned. So they're like, okay, well, let's not try to convince them. Let's just be as transparent as possible about our vision and what we want to achieve. The people that believe in this support and support it will get behind it. And then maybe with their influence, we can change things. I mean, you know, that could be a Machiavellian move thing too. Like, I don't know. Like, Facebook is hardly known for its innocent approach to progress and change.
Completely, yeah. Like, I was talking to, so yesterday, me and you were at an event or dinner or a gathering, sorry. And Marco Rogers was there, right? Everybody check out Marco Rogers. He's a really smart software engineer based out in the Valley. And he was saying to me, like, he used to work at Microsoft for a little bit. He used to work at Yammer, which was acquired by Microsoft. And Microsoft in the early 2000s got hit with like a lot of anti-competitive like behavior in terms of what they were doing. And like Bill Gates basically got interrogated. And he was like, when he was at Microsoft, even though it was like 15 years later, the echoes of that still was there. As in, like, they were always making sure, is this legal? What are we doing? You know, how does this affect us, like, in that sense? Whereas at Facebook, I'm sure that conversation is very rarely had, because it's just like, they're like children. Move fast and break things is the motto of a child. Like, do you see what I'm saying? Oops, we broke democracy. Oops, you know what I'm saying? Let's take a stab at currencies now. Let's see what happens. So I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. Like,
I also don't think that Facebook are like that anymore. You know, they are a public company, and we have to think of who sits on the boards of these public companies. You know, Mark Zuckerberg has come very close to losing his board seat, his chairman position, his CEO position. He's one of those rare founders that's been able to actually like stick with the company at the helm of the ship from its very inception to reaching like a more mature stage of existence. But that doesn't mean that he's the only voice at the decision-making table. Of course, we've read reports, for example, when the Instagram founders left, that Mark rules with a very like monopolizing style, mm-hmm. and he is a bit like authoritarian dictator. I don't know enough data to like back that up, but I do feel like there are experienced people with a vested interest in the company's longevity for them to like not make any more crass decisions. Do you see what I'm saying?
I disagree, because the whole like Cambridge Analytica stuff happened while Facebook was a public company. A lot of the worst stuff has happened while Facebook is a public company.
And there are people that probably knew that that was going on, but just couldn't anticipate that public opinion would shift so much that they would be upset about that. You know what I mean?
I don't think so. I think there was because of the philosophy of move faster and break things, and everything is about making things frictionless, they didn't think that actually, you know, oh, there's millions of dollars in the currency, or in rubles, are being spent on Facebook ads that have a political bent and they're specifically targeting black people. Nobody, those controls weren't there. Nobody thought.
So
you know Kara Swisher from Recode, she basically went to, when they were demoing like the live feature where you could video broadcast live, and she was like, someone's going to kill somebody and broadcast it live. And they were like, no, why are you being so negative? And it's like, anybody who's grown up is going to be like, who's seen beyond the paradigm of just innovation, which is a great thing to have to a certain extent.
Right.
But anybody who's grown up and seen bad things happen, it's going to be like, yo, this is going
to
be misused.
But they knew. What I'm trying to say is, like, I think what they underestimated was their ability to cover it up. Right. I'll give you another example. Like, Casey Newton of The Verge did a great expose that we covered earlier, in earlier episodes, about the life of Facebook moderators, right? So this, like, third party, still owned and controlled by Facebook company, where people are being forced to filter through horrifically violent, pornographic, explicit images to make sure that they don't enter our feeds. Remember, Facebook has some of the most powerful artificial intelligence that exists in the tech sector right now, whether it's the face filters we're messing around with in Instagram or the algorithm that's determining how ads are served and priced. They didn't ignore this potential risk. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't underestimate this risk. What they underestimated was their ability to cover it up and stop the public backlash from happening.
Yeah,
like,
maybe you're right.
I think they knew. They know everything. They even know stuff that we don't know yet, because they've been better at covering that up. Same kind of thing with Google. All these big tech companies, they calculate the risks and they wager it against the reward. And then based on that risk reward, they go, okay, it's worth it.
Speaking of facial recognition, what you just mentioned briefly, have you tried that face app that makes you look older?
No, I haven't, but I, it's pretty funny.
Like, there was a whole bunch of people that were like, you know, everyone's vibing with it, it's funny, it's jokes. And then some people were like, well, actually, like, this is like an unknown company based in St. Petersburg, Russia, and it has rights to your image for perpetuity, forever. Ooh. Basically, you sign away the rights to that image. And it just brought up a whole conversation of just like privacy and whatever. But then at the same time, there is an element now where we are getting kind of Russian phobic, where if anything is Russian, we're like, oh my God, it's Russian. And it's like, well, you know, like there are developers, like, I don't know, like,
It's like we've just gone back in time 70 years.
Literally,
to the Cold War.
It's the Cold War all over again. Like, and everyone's like, oh my God, it's a Russian. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? And everyone's kind of side eyeing it. But at the same time, I am thinking to myself, like, I'm much more aware now of like what the apps that I download, and just like, what am I giving you access to? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, do I want to give you complete access to my photo?
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of ish. You see what I'm saying? That you can mess with here right now.
I agree. Like, I mean, I think we should be mindful of like not falling into ideological trappings of us versus them, East versus West, and stuff like that. Because exactly like you said, there is a very dominant like narrative in the media right now, which is very anti-Russian, especially like in the UK and the US.
Yeah.
But I also think it's an interesting debate, not only in the context of face app, like, do I feel comfortable giving my face to this company I don't know about in an age of like, you know, we're introducing technology that could like support police and like profiling people through CCTV images. Mm. We're entering an age where like deep fakes are getting better and better. And like, who knows, you're going to see your face on like some porno video in the future because someone just borrowed it. Who knows? Yeah. But then I think the reason why it's so difficult to debate it was recently highlighted to me in this podcast with like Yuval Harari, the author of Sapiens and Homo Deus, aka your
my hero.
Yuval,
phone me, man. We got to do this. Come on, whatever this may be. I'm joking.
So the latest episode of the TED podcast,
right?
He talks about how it's almost impossible for us as individuals to put value on abstract things like our face or data. He's like, we're used to putting value on like property, things cash like money. Land. You know what I mean? Like if I say, hey, this is my plot of land. I'm going to put a fence around it. You can't move in. You can't touch it. You can't put anything on it.
Right.
Unless you pay me X amount that I've decided because I can see you and I can see you getting into my land.
Yeah.
It's like now you apply it to something like DNA.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm giving to a health app because I want to find out what my ancestry is. Yeah. Do I own that? How much is that? My DNA is like copyable. It's a bit, it's here, it's there, it's everywhere.
And they can sell it to whoever they want.
Exactly. And I was like, how do I value that? And also, does it make sense to value that in a monetary way? Like, can data be valued like things? Like, can I assign a monetary value to it? Like, it costs this much, or does data need to be valued with a like for like thing, like other types of data that could be more valuable to me?
Well, I mean, I don't know. That DNA situation, there were companies that were doing really cheap DNA tests, and it turned out they were able to do so is because they sell your DNA. Not, it's anonymized, so it's not like Abadesi's DNA $10.99. It's like they'll sell it to like pharmaceutical companies who are doing like tests, and they want to know, oh, we want like, we need a whole swath of DNA data regarding people who have mixed ancestry or who might be West African or East African, whatever, whatever. So those companies are already monetizing your DNA data. So that it does have a monetary value. It's just that you're not seeing it. You are maybe getting a subsidized service, or you are basically saying, here's my data. Forget DNA, for example. Here's my data. Show me funny cat videos. Here's my data. Show me, you know what I'm saying? Let me see some twerking videos or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Whatever you're doing on Instagram.
And how would I know that that's a fair price to pay, right? So for example, Instagram, we are both active on Instagram. I upload a story. I upload photos. I'm giving them free content. I'm interacting with my friends. It's great. Okay, so what do I get out of it? It's fun, it's entertaining, I connect with my friends, I can build my personal brand. And like maybe through building my personal brand, I can earn more money, I can create more opportunities, whatever. Comparatively, right, the value that Facebook get is way bigger than that. But how do I calculate that trade-off? As individuals, how do we calculate that trade-off? And coming back to FaceApp again, it's funny. I'm going to make myself look old. I'm going to share it in my work Slack. I'm going to share it with my family. We're going to have a bit of a laugh about it.
Yeah.
But now my face and probably all the data in my phone, because I didn't read terms and conditions. And often when you download these apps, they're like, oh, by the way, while we're at it, can we just look at all your photos?
So supposedly on your phone app doesn't have permission to look at all your photos.
Okay, good. So it's just you.
It has that one picture. Right.
And that's it.
And that's it, supposedly. Apple's API is very quite tight, and supposedly it doesn't have permission for all your photos.
Can it access your camera and microphone, though?
I'm not sure.
Because I recently tried to turn my microphone off on Instagram after I realized that every time I say something, I'm getting served an ad for it. And guess what? I wasn't allowed to post anything on Instagram, including a photo from my library, until I reactivated my microphone.
Damn, they got... So this episode is sponsored by Your First Million. It's an amazing podcast by the wonderful Arlen Hamilton. If you don't know who she is, then...
You should know.
Do you? She's the CEO of Backstage Capital.
Founder and managing partner.
Yeah, which invests in...
Underestimated founders.
So she really pioneered the space in the VC game in terms of investing in people of color, women, and all kinds of underrepresented people. And now she's got her own podcast.
By the way, she raised over $10 million.
Listen, this is what I'm saying. The whole thesis of the podcast is talking to people who have achieved either, you know, a million something in whatever metric, whether it's $1 million, a million, you know, downloads, a million, whatever, right? So listen to the podcast. You're going to level up. I listened to one episode already so far. It's dope. Go check it out.
Arlen Hamilton, Your First Million.
All I'm going to say is free ASAP Rocky. That's all I'm going to say. I'm joking, I'm playing. Or should it not be free ASAP Rocky? That's the question people have been saying. Because
what happened?
So he's locked up in prison in Sweden right now. And I'm hearing he was actually under some pretty bad conditions.
Yeah, dude. They beat people up. But we don't know what came before that.
Oh, you mean so what he did to get... I'm talking about the conditions in terms of his imprisonment. I heard actually that they were holding him in some kind of solitary confinement, and like they were like, it was really bad. They had him moving like it was Guantanamo Bay, apparently.
What?
I don't know about now.
In Sweden?
No, apparently Swedish prisons are really liberal, but like when they just arrest you and they put you in like jail, like thing, supposedly to frighten you into like copping a deal and saying whatever, they put you in like really harsh conditions.
I feel like nothing can compare to a US prison.
I don't know. Yeah, it's true.
Because
it's true.
US prisons are like oversubscribed, overpopulated. Yeah. I'm not saying, I mean, I need to do more fact checking, but I'm just saying that, like, generally speaking,
I actually don't know the details of his case per se, but what is interesting is that a lot of people have said that he's unjustly imprisoned. Let's just leave it at that, right? And people started saying, you know, free ASAP Rocky. A lot of musicians were like, you know what, man?
Boycott Sweden.
Boycott Sweden. And I actually have heard that like Sweden is kind of low-key racist in that sense, like, because I think he was headlining a lot of festivals and he was like the first hip-hop, it was the first time hip-hop had headlined all the local festivals. And like, I've heard of people who have been imprisoned in Sweden, and a lot of times it's not the most friendly reaction to black people, essentially. Anyways, but then people started drudging up and finding old tweets of ASAP, and his tweet basically is saying was along the lines of, listen, man, stop asking me about Ferguson. Stop asking me about, you know, all these people. Stop asking about Black Lives Matter. All I know about is dressing fly, effing girls, you know, taking my my molly, my lean, whatever. Yeah.
He's basic.
Don't, yeah, don't, not even basic. Just don't bother me. I'm a celebrity. I don't have to worry about it. I don't know nothing about that. I'm a star now.
Yeah.
So then.
That is basic to me. Like, if you're not engaging in, like, society, you're basic.
Yeah. So.
You're one dimensional.
Does that mean that he is then unworthy of support in the sense? Is it like, yo, like, you forgot you were black. Here's your wake up moment. Here's your black card again. Like, wake up and you're on your own though. Hold your own nuts, basically. Or is it
I feel that's like moral relativism. Is that like the way you say it, where you're just kind of like, oh, okay, I am going to take a stance on supporting people who've been unjustly incarcerated if they are good people.
Right.
But if they're not good people, then I don't take a stance on people who've been unjustly imprisoned. You know what I mean?
But it's beyond just being a good person. It's almost just like someone who specifically says, I would not help somebody if I was in my current position.
But maybe this is how you change people's minds. But maybe this is how you change people's minds.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe you know, maybe this is like an opportunity. I guess, I mean, the point you're making is absolutely right. Like, oh, okay, yeah, now you see what it feels like when people with a platform to help you don't do it, right? Yeah. That is one possible scenario that could happen. But at the same time, like, nothing will really change with that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe it's like actually an opportunity for him to learn and to grow. And also, when people were like, boycott Sweden, I was like, ain't nobody inviting you to Sweden. Some of the rappers being like, boycott Sweden, I was like, nobody invited you to Sweden.
Yeah. My uncle, who's got a mixtape, he was like, boycott Sweden, I ain't going. I was like, right, you know, trying to holler at you. Check out his mixtape. I made that up. He hasn't got a mixtape. No, what was I going to say though? It's mad, man. Like, I don't know. I want ASAP to be safe. I want him to be fine. I want him to be out of prison.
I don't know what they said.
I think it was like he did it in defense of somebody else. Like, it was really harsh. It wasn't he just randomly beat somebody up. I'm sure someone who knows the details, who's listening at home, is probably frustrated because we don't know the details. But it's questionable whether he deserves to be there. You want to take a pause and find out why he's there?
Yeah, I just wanted to... Oh, it's in Swedish.
I should have brought my intern. I should have brought Sawa to do the research for us.
I read it for last time, but basically... I mean, there's a video on TMZ.
I don't want to watch it. Okay, hold on. We're watching it now.
Why are you...
That's him. All right. Oh, anyway.
Okay, so like a proper fracas has broken out, and there is heavy punching involved.
That person did something. It wasn't just he just beat him up randomly. I think that person's
right, but like, the law is the law, right? The law is the law. That's like a wife. That's like a husband being like, "Yeah, I know I killed my wife, but she did cheat on me."
No, because the law is the law. Okay, calm down, police. Calm down,
Judge Dredd
in the building. Anyways.
But I'm just saying, like, you know, we can't say he shouldn't be sent to prison because he beat up someone that deserved it. If the law is that when you beat people up, they go to jail.
I'm saying that. I remember talking to somebody who was on jury duty, and I was like, they don't want me on jury duty because if the law is bullshit, I'm not convicting. Like, if it's a sex worker and they're like, yeah, you got convicted, I'm not convicting. Or, oh, they got caught with weed. Don't put me on a jury because I don't care what the law is. I'm doing what's right. Okay. I'm sorry.
Wow. Okay.
Come on. But they would refuse to put me on jury duty.
But that's not the way. That's not the way. You would have to admit that when they interview you.
I would admit that. No. But you remember when, apparently when OJ got found not guilty, like, one of the jury members, like, looked to OJ and gave him the black power fist.
I got you, bro.
He's like, I got you. It was just terrible. I would have convicted OJ, though.
Okay.
But at the time, it was really like, I mean, I was too young, but at the time, it really felt like basically, you know, if you're black, you had to support him, even though he was as guilty as hell.
Yeah.
As guilty as hell. Oh, he's on Twitter now. Have you seen him?
Is he?
He's on Twitter. Say yes. He signed up for Twitter and like he got like 200, 300,000 followers like instantly. And he's not tweeting. He's actually doing videos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really weird. Just like, hello.
How to get away with murder.
Yeah, basically. I don't know, man. All he does is play golf in Florida.
Wow.
And I don't know, like, very strange. I ain't following OJ.
He's probably Trump's only black friend.
Oh, man. You know what the funny thing about OJ was is that, like, he actually really was a sellout. Like, he didn't want anything to do with the black community, really and truly. And then as soon as he got in trouble, he was like, they're trying to get me because I'm black. Like, yeah. I was like, fuck you, OJ.
But you know,
man.
What? Like, okay, I agree that that's messed up. But I do also feel that discourse has come a very long way in terms of, like, what we see as, like, structural oppression and, like, how we understand race identity and how that links to status and success and all this kind of stuff. And basically where I'm going with this is this. There was a time when it actually was very much the case, like a token kind of culture.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only space for like one black person here,
right.
Positive discrimination, all that kind of stuff. And I feel like, you know, a lot of people in that generation, they kind of like internalize those values as they grew up. And it's so difficult to separate like your sense of self from like what you've been socialized into believing is true. And so for many people like that, they were just like, I'm going to talk like Jerry and I'm going to dress like Bob and I'm going to learn how to play golf and I'm going to do everything I can to make them not see me as black. So I can increase my chance of success, which is so sad. You know, we are very privileged to be living in a time, you know, it's not perfect,
mm-hmm.
but at least the spectrum of what is an acceptable identity has broadened massively.
Yeah. So,
for public figures and stuff
like that.
It's true.
Like I was, so, you know, like there was that recent thing with like a few people from kind of like the black tech community and the ethnic minority tech community here went to Downing Street basically. Right. Yeah. And
Downing Street is where the Prime Minister lives.
Yeah, so it's basically like our White House, basically, kind of thing to come talk and whatever, right? And I was invited and I couldn't make it. And I was like, oh, you know what, though? What would I have wore? And I was seeing everybody in suits and I was like, no, I don't want to wear a suit.
Yeah.
I would rock up there casual. Cause it's,
but yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
You don't have to no more.
Of
like,
course.
You don't have to. Like, back in the day, it would have just been like, and it probably would say more to someone who's young watching it to think,
That's relatable.
It's relatable. Like,
shout out, I mean? Nafisa Bakar, CEO, founder of Amalia.com.
She wore the Brexit shit, basically. Brexit. If you know what Brexit is, the UK leaving the EU. That's a whole other story. Do your own Googles if you don't know what Brexit is.
Yeah, just Google it. But her t-shirt said Brexit shit, and it was hilarious.
Speaking of politics, fam, have you been following this whole thing with Ilhan Omar? You haven't been following it. So Ilhan Omar is a Somali congresswoman in America. She's a refugee.
And not like, just her, AOC.
Yeah, there's AOC, there's Ilhan, there's a Palestinian American woman, I forgot her name, and there's an African American woman. They're like the four like superstar women of color, like new congresswomen. They came in out of the blue. They're all Democrats. They're all really progressive. They must have went to like the border where they're imprisoning all the attempted migrants, and they've got children in cages and they're separated from their parents. So they went to investigate, right? And then Tutu's now like, Ilhan, she pretty much caught most of the flack. Trump did a speech and the crowd started chanting like, send her back.
Yeah.
Yeah, send her back.
But that was because he basically said in a speech or a tweet to send them back to their countries.
Trump tweeted, it's funny because all these women are from countries originally that have shithole governments, yeah, and now you're coming here and you're criticizing us and you're criticizing our government. Why don't you go back basically and fix your crap country basically? Yeah,
and
insinuating that they're not really Americans. One,
yes,
they have no right to be critical of government policy. Two, none of it makes sense. Like when I sat there and I deeped it and I thought about it, I was like, rah, you are so stupid. Like, you can't, you're literally saying if you disagree with me and my government, you don't love America. That is so dangerous. That is so authoritarian. Like, you are like five steps behind. I don't want to say Nazism, but you are like five steps behind. Like
very close to fascism now.
So fascistic, like crazy. And even if you're saying, when you say to somebody, send them back, go back to where you came from, that's about three steps behind the N-word. Like, that's like literally, you're almost dead. Yeah, you're almost dead. Yeah, exactly.
Disgusting.
What do you think, man?
I think, I'm not surprised. It's so bad because I feel like my coping mechanism has been to just filter out most of the stuff that he says. I'm so happy I don't live in the US because it would be a lot harder to do that.
Right.
But, you know, I've got to this point where I just like expect him to say nonsense. I expect him to say crazy stuff. I studied like the Third Reich when I was at school. We've seen dictators operate. We've seen these like, you know, they're like puppets, aren't they, really? Like, you know their character. They're extremely predictable. The sad thing is the danger that comes with that in terms of how this manifests in reality. So on a ground level, you now have Trump at a rally with people saying, send her back. And inevitably, when this stuff happens, there's a spike in hate crimes.
Completely.
There's a spike in violence against people of color. There's a spike in violence against women, which is already really high because we live in patriarchy. So on the one hand, it's like, okay, as an individual in this world, I've got to like separate my mind from this because I need to get out of bed and get on with my life. But at the same time, it's like, if we're not doing something about it, and if we're not policing it, and if we are not calling out racism for what it is, nothing's going to change. And even worse, people are going to die because people die. People die because of racism.
And I'm concerned that not just other individuals will die. I'm concerned that Ilhan will get hurt because he is stoking up so much hatred against her because she like ticks all of the boxes that infuriates a lot of those people, which is one, she's a black African, two, she's a Muslim, three, she's a woman. Like, and she wears a hijab. Bruh, it's the perfect trifecta.
And she's like, in power, right? And women should not be in power, right?
And she's critical of Trump.
Yeah.
And she calls out his BS. She calls out his racism and whatever. And I really fear for, I'm not a religious person, but I fear for her safety. Like, and I hope whoever's in control of the universe, like, looks after. The other thing is, I wouldn't say, like, we have to be careful not to be like, oh, Trump's crazy. He's not crazy. He's espousing.
I didn't say he's crazy.
You did, but it's all right. It wasn't like you really, it wasn't like you just said it offhand. Like, you're like, oh, he's crazy. These dictators are crazy.
I mean, like, he's like,
he's not crazy. He's espousing just textbook white nationalist policy. Like, this is just like, I'm not even going to give it to him and be like, yeah, he's
not. Yeah, it's very intentional.
It's intentional white nationalist, like, talking points and thing. And he, I don't know what's in his heart, but if it's just a ploy just to rile up his base or whatever, like, I don't care. I don't know, man. It's very depressing. It's very depressing. Like I said, I'm glad I don't live in America either. And the funny thing is that when I was young, that was the one that's where I wanted to move. I was like, yo, I want to go to America. That's where it's at. That's what all the opportunities
are. Cats out the bag now.
Cats out the bag, fam. I'm just like, wow. Like, even though most of my company.
War on slavery rages on, man.
Yeah. Anyways.
Lil
Nas X.
Let's talk about Lil Nas X coming out of the closet, which is awesome. Hip hop is very homophobic historically, right? Let's talk about this. Snoop Dogg was banned from coming to the UK a few years ago over his homophobic lyrics.
All right.
Many songs use gay in a derogatory way or, you know, basically are homophobic.
Yeah.
And this for me is like a real like landmark moment in an industry that, you know, we love, means so much to us because Lil Nas X came out. And not only did he come out, but he received so much support and affection from the rest of the community, even like old school OG folks. Like when it was like Murder Inc. CEO Irv Gotti, I was like, I haven't heard that name in like 10 years.
Murder.
Right? Ja Rule, Ashanti days. But yeah, this is awesome. What do you think?
Yeah, awesome, man. Like, I think everybody just took it in their stride and kept it moving. And that's what you like to see. I think some people actually did mention offhand that even though Frank Ocean isn't necessarily hip hop, he's kind of hip hop adjacent. He did a lot of work with hip hop artists. Like some people have said that it did kind of hurt his career. At one point he was on a lot more features and he's done great album and great music, but I do feel like people did distance themselves from him. Like that's my, as a amateur hip hop head, that's what I kind of felt. And I think hopefully things have progressed since then, and I hope Lil Nas X goes from strength to strength. I mean, that song is just, bro, that's going to be number one until the day I die, bro. It's still number one, you know?
Yeah.
And there's mad new remixes. I think Young Thug just did a remix of it as well.
Yeah.
And like,
This is good. This is very good for the world and, you know, my view of the world and where I want the world to go.
Yeah, completely. Like,
because, you know, we've talked in the past as well about, because, you know, let's talk about gay culture, queer culture, in the black world, whether that's in the West or in the diaspora.
So impactful. Disproportionately so.
We're actually so behind. I think of like, you know, Nigeria, like where my dad's from, and like, you know, homophobia is just normalized almost.
Oh, so you mean in the sense of in like, okay, the African diaspora, so I get you, right?
Do you see what I'm saying? But like, you know, we need there to be more high profile black people who are openly gay so that it can shift culture. And like, I think, like we've said before on the show, pop culture really can shift perspectives.
Completely.
You know, more than let's say like writing a book or whatever, because it's always in your face. It's stuff that you know, it's stuff you love, it's stuff you 100%. Won't stop listening to. So yeah, I hope we see more of that.
Shout out to Lil Nas X.
This episode of Techish has been brought to you by one of my favorite photo editing apps, VSCO. Mm-hmm. They're hiring.
Yeah, they are. So go check out the roles on pocketjobs.com. Whole bunch of roles. If you're a software engineer, they got Android roles, iOS roles, backend roles, and link in the show notes. And yeah, shout out to our sponsor. We love you.
Whoop.
Yo. Adele. So Instagram, they're demoing no likes.
No likes.
So in a bunch of countries.
So your feed will look normal.
Basically, yeah. I can pretend to be popular.
I'm joking.
Yeah, so like, they're demoing it in a few countries. It's not in the UK or in the States, but it's in a few other countries where like some people are going to have their likes removed, basically. Now, the pushback I saw, some people were like, oh, this is not the feature that we asked for. We want the chronological timeline. Guys, never happening. Give up. Chronological timeline will never happen because that is not how Facebook makes its money through a chronological timeline. Facebook makes its money by having an algorithmic timeline. Give up, please. So, but the whole no like thing, the people that I saw who pushed back were the ones who are so bought in to the hierarchical nature that social media, you know, instigates that they were like, no, I want to see my likes because you are winning. You know what I'm saying? You are quote unquote popular. Like,
but you might crack.
Yeah, if you're like a 13-year-old, 14-year-old kid in high school, this is probably a godsend because there are people that are, I can imagine like the clout people get for being popular and getting hella likes. It must drive some people insane. So I commend Instagram for this. I'm not against this whatsoever.
Yeah. And I'll just add a bit of a techish spin to this. So I did a Product Hunt interview with Nick Brisburn, who is the managing partner of a fund based here in London, seed and like pre-seed stage, called Forward Partners. And he's got kids who are like 12 and 14.
Right.
So just like the example you just shared. And he was saying that they view their phones in a very cynical way.
In what sense?
Because what's happening is like the pendulum is swinging. They see phones as these things which have been designed to keep us addicted.
Wow.
Products that have been designed, you know, for a company's gain while the individual suffers or the individual feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I also feel like this is a move to engage younger audiences because they've seen through what we fell victim to, which is this, you know, dopamine hit that ultimately preys on our insecurities and stuff like that and our sense of self and our sense of status. So Instagram, we're like, oh, we're about so much more than just how many likes you have or how many people reshared this, blah, blah, blah. You know, let's just go back to community. Let's go back to whatever. There's a kind of cynical part of me that's just like, it's an existential move because they're like, if we don't change, we could lose our user base and we could die.
I think it's more of a thing of, I don't think they would ever lose their user base. Or at least not for the foreseeable future because people are, it's crack, crack.
That's what they said about MSN Messenger.
Yeah, that's true. I'm still on there. Hola, who's on MSN?
Emoticons.
And on MySpace.
Emoticon.
Do you ever used to use High Five?
Yeah, man. High Five and Bebo.
High Five was
Bebo was my jam, actually, more than High Five.
Do you know why High Five was so dangerous? You could see who viewed your profile.
Oh,
so I remember
bitch
being young and she'd be like, what girl was on my profile? Oh, my days. Anyways, I don't think mom, shout out to mom. So anyways, I think on Instagram, like, people are pretty much hooked and addicted. But the narrative and the public discourse now is that it's a harmful product for your mental health. It's not great for your, you know, your well-being. So I think they're trying to get ahead of the curve before there's any kind of, you know,
regulation.
Yeah. So you're like, listen, look what we're trying. Because let's keep it 100. If there have been studies that prove that it's bad for your mental health, why are there not warning labels, like we've said before, that you have on cigarettes? This product is proven to be bad for your mental health. Take care.
Because most of the people that make those laws don't even have a friggin' smartphone, let alone Instagram, so they don't know.
That's true. And also, a lot of people are just co-opted by industry. If you're a regulator, like, more times than not, like, you don't want to offend the industry because maybe that's where your job's at.
It's the same kind of thing with, like, video games, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Because, like, apparently, like, there are links that show, like, high school kids that kill people. Play a lot of like super violent games.
True.
No?
No, you know what? They've actually done studies where they looked at, specifically with young people, like video games on mobile phones, that they're actually kind of social. So when the rates of self-harm and suicide in the studies that I've seen have gone up specifically for young women, just because of the fact that boys tend to use their smartphone for like video games and just like, even porn, for example, which has its own negative implications. But in terms of young girls, they're violence. Using it for like social validation. Like my picture, thing.
Yeah, interesting.
Posting a picture up into the ether and waiting for people to validate you. Like, and that's terrible for your mental health. So like...
Interesting.
Yeah, anyways, what's next?
Well, let's see. I'm just sad that UK wasn't on the country that Instagram was testing it on.
Soon come,
innit?
Soon come. Yeah, I'm fearful for one of the big tech companies.
Are you?
I'm really fearful. And the one I'm fearful for is Netflix. I don't think... I think they're going to struggle over the next 5 years.
What?
Because so the subscriber numbers came out recently and it's down.
Yes.
So the stock tanked a bit. But so hear me out. Here's my thesis, yeah?
Yeah, why do you think this? I'm still very bullish. I love Netflix. So, I don't watch it as much as I used to, but that's because I'm busy. Sorry.
So Netflix used to have... over all its competitors, Netflix used to have a technology advantage. They had a platform and they had distribution to all the consumers. They were, you know, they got the app, they got the website,
mm-hmm.
and all the other, you know, other like content providers didn't really have a platform, or they were just using TV or cinema or whatever. Now everyone's doing their own platform and everyone is going to be able to compete head to head with Netflix. They're pulling all their content away from Netflix. So now the game is who's got the best content. Yeah, to have the best content, you have to have the deepest pockets. There is no, the technical term is moat. There is no competitive advantage there. Amazon is going to spend billions, yeah? Netflix is going to have to spend billions. Disney already has all of the IP. They've already got, they're going to pull down Star Wars from Netflix. They're going to pull down Marvel from Netflix. All the Disney cartoons, all the Disney films. So now it's like, who can provide the best content? That is not a position that you want to be in as a company when you're up against other big companies with deep pockets. You want to be in a position where you're like, we've got some kind of network effects. There's a barrier to entry. You can't come in because it's because we've got all this. And it doesn't exist anymore. Like, as far as I can see, it's just now who's going to have the best content. And I might subscribe to the other streaming platforms. I'm not saying Netflix is going to go bankrupt anytime soon, but I just don't feel like they're in as strong a position as they used to be. And I fear for the next, like, because they've lost Friends. Friends is going to the HBO Max. So HBO is doing their own streaming platform now.
Oh, see, I've been waiting for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
and The Office. They've lost The Office. They've lost Friends. So, but you're going to see more and more people now, like, just outbidding them, or, you know, what you used to find on Netflix just won't be there anymore. And it's like...
I agree that they will probably lose market share. They did also increase their prices recently. I wonder if that had an impact on it. Like, they got more churn than they thought they would based on that, because people are suddenly like, wait, hang on a minute. How many times have I actually watched Netflix? I will say another thing as well. I don't know if it's because taste change or what, but I feel like when Netflix was really hot, like... 3-ish years ago, we were like, oh my God, Stranger Things. All these shows, like Narcos, House of Cards, so good. Since then, I mean, the bar just gets higher and higher for TV content every year.
Exactly.
And other production houses, just like you said. So I would definitely say that, like, a lot of the big shows that have dropped in the last year haven't necessarily come from Netflix.
They haven't.
And that can't be a good position for them to be in. But... it's too soon to say, because we don't know what they're cooking up.
Yeah.
We don't know what they're cooking up.